The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now we're joined by Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Safety and Security Auditor. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
First of all, there was a story knocking around that someone was lobbying for the reopening of the compulsory stop at Shannon. Turned out to be nonsense.
It's a non-story because, I mean, when I was training as an air traffic controller, they used to move the Shamrock 105, a 747, out of Dublin, up by Granard, and then land it in Shannon about 18 minutes later, costing a fortune in terms of cycles and undercarriage and use.
Fuel and pollution and all the rest. Yeah.
So it wasn't worth the effort then, and it shouldn't happen again, in my own
opinion. Okay, so that's nonsense. Now, let's talk about an aircraft that we've never seen in Dublin Airport.
True. To my knowledge, it's never been in Dublin. The Airbus A380. It was an idea in the late 1990s that we'd have a huge aircraft capable of carrying 500 people, and they were designing it with two decks, which is unusual, you know, because they wanted to have less pollution, first of all, and then less difficulties on routes. You could have more capacity for less effort, and it worked fairly well.
I was on it recently from Dubai to Sydney.
Oh, lovely trip.
Fabulous aircraft. Very quiet.
Very quiet and very comfortable inside and suitable. The seats are very comfortable for someone of my length, and the windows are good and the fittings are good. Mind you, they only made 251 of them and stopped making them a couple of years ago, and there are about 130 still in service, and a few more are being put back into service.
Now, why did they stop making them? I mean, was it the problem like in Dublin Airport, you don't have a double-decker boarding capability?
That's true. In some ways, they had to modify some of the airports in terms of taxiways and then stands. And of course, as you say, the double deck was special. So not all airports had them. Only certain routes would do it. And then they came across the idea that maybe you could put long, thin routes in. In other words, you'd put what Aer Lingus are doing now into places like Las Vegas and small single aisle aircraft. So the demand just died. Another point which I found very strange, considering what happened in America, none of the American airlines at all order them, which was unusual, because even last week my son sent me a picture of a Delta Airlines A350-900, brand new. So the American airlines are buying Airbuses, but they did not buy, for some reason, the double deck and prefer to go for 747s, I think, at that stage.
Well, of course, Trump's trying to persuade them always to buy American rather than European.
Indeed.
But, I mean, with Boeing's difficulties.
Actually, the deliveries are slowing down now. They haven't made three. They're going to make four or five a month of the 737s. But they're looking for spare parts from parts of Europe as well. There's going to be a complication there, whether you like it or not.
And we heard on the business news earlier this morning there might be an increase in maintenance costs because of trying to source parts for Boeing's with tariffs on them and all the rest.
Yes, it's a remarkably complex thing. And the Chinese are in the same boat, so to speak. We'll talk about that in a minute if you have time.
So they're bringing some of these A380s back into service. Why?
Yeah, because the demand is there. As you know, these were put to bed. Some of them went to the desert during the COVID time because there certainly wasn't going to be a return. Then they came back with a bang. And because they can't get the aircraft from either Airbus or Boeing as quickly as they would like, they did not ramp up the production because they were storing them in places. They put them back into service now and they're trying to get as many as they can. I didn't realise until a few days ago that as many as 10 airlines are still flying them, including Emirates and British Airways and Etihad and so forth, Lufthansa. They all put them back into service. Qantas did the same thing in Australia, because they find they can carry the bulk and then put, you know, as many people on one aircraft as would take two flights in the past. They're also remarkably economical and, as you said, remarkably quiet in terms of the environment. So they do, provided you have the facilities at the airport to deal with them, they do have a good service life ahead of them. And they're designed to land to last 35 to 40 years. Yet some of them have been scrapped. About 100 or more have been, put into the desert, and 22 have been scrapped, one of which went to Knock Airport, as far as I know, in recent times. So,
but trying to reinstate an aircraft that's been in the desert, not really possible.
It is actually.
You can clean them up, can you?
You can clean them up, because if you have them in, I mean, I saw them in California and they're also in places like, Nevada and so forth. If you can do them and they're dry and the aircraft run, I mean, this one, for example, Emirates put one back into service, which had been stored in the desert in Dubai for 5 years, but they had to, it took about $50,000, but it was flying back and is now serviced and it's on service today.
Of course, I mean, the engines would be covered. And,
Yes. Once the rats don't get in and start eating the electrics, things work fairly well.
Now, something else you want to talk about today is turbulence.
Indeed.
Is there an increase?
There is, I didn't realise, we've just discussed this before, particularly after people were injured or in some cases killed on board aircraft which had severe turbulence. There's been a study done by the International Air Transport Association, a thing called the Turbulence Aware Platform. 25 airlines are contributing to this and have done so for 7 or 8 years. 2,600 aircraft, the records of these are kept. The trouble about it is that the academic studies say that in the next number of years, 75% of turbulence will increase. In other words, there'll be an increase of 75% due to global warming. And they're fairly standard about that. They're saying, no, we are quite positive this is going to happen. And we want to help airlines to, you know, avoid or even mitigate this turbulence. The various factors that cause this can be the thermal effects of warmer and faster air meeting the slower, colder air. We know that. That's been there for years. Wake turbulence from aircraft, particularly heavy ones, in and around airports or in high levels. And the effects of heat from topographical features or downdrafts and updrafts, which cause, you know, by storms, that kind of thing. And they're avoided as much
as possible. Now, you know, when you feel turbulence, and sometimes you feel it in the pit of your stomach as you fall. How much do you fall in a turbulent episode?
It's a good question. And in moderate or light turbulence, it can be 3 to 6 metres, which is not that much, you would think, but it's enough to shudder the aircraft, and the wings will bend and it'll give you an uncomfortable feeling throughout the aircraft. Normally, the pilots can see this coming. They've got radars which look ahead if possible. The serious problem is when you have clear air turbulence where nobody knows where it is, and it can be in the tropics in particular. And in that case, in severe turbulence, an aircraft can fall 30 metres or 100 feet. No wonder my wine spilled over Kazakhstan last year, you know. But the serious matter about that is if you're not strapped in, you can literally become airborne in a spacecraft, and people have hit
their heads off
and stuff falls down like that. And because of this turbulence program, they're trying to work out what routes are going to be, you know, severely affected by this. They've got, for example, in 2023, a total of 38 million reports were generated. I had to look that up twice. I couldn't believe that. It means the turbulence is being recorded better. We've got a real-time, record of where it happens, and they're trying to plan for that. So the more we look at it, the more we see it's going to happen time and time again.
Now, you mentioned aviation in China, and we saw that Xi Jinping decided to order all Chinese airlines not to take delivery of Boeings.
That's
a very targeted kind of sanction on the United States.
It is. As recently as Friday, just a few days ago, an aircraft was being delivered to Xiamen Airlines, if I know. They've got 737 MAXs. And it was turned around near Hawaii and went back to Seattle because they didn't want delivery of it. And this is from President Xi himself, his own orders. He flies around in a 747 made by Boeing, a 747-8, and he was in Vietnam. I saw it on television like that. So he's very, very happy to use the aircraft. But because of the levies on board, these aircraft are allegedly 55 million, which is a bit of a bargain. That's dollars, you know.
Yeah.
But if you put the levy on them when it's being delivered, it makes no sense at all.
But also, Boeing will flog it to somebody else.
Oh, of course they will.
It's not a problem for Boeing.
No, there is a huge demand for these aircraft in other parts of the world. You just have to be sure that you're not going to be caught with the levying and the spare parts.
The problem, I think, for Boeing is that there's an order book from Chinese airlines.
That's right.
Of maybe 2,000 Boeings over the next 20 years. And that's where it would hurt.
Indeed. And I mean, it makes no sense. It's a strange way of doing business in that regard. The spare parts alone and the maintenance records and all that kind of thing. If you hit it with a tariff coming into your country, the people who have to pay are either the airlines or the customers who use that airline, the passengers, in other words, like that.
Now, what about Chinese aircraft? Is there a local manufacturing outfit that can replace the efforts of Boeing?
Probably yes. There's been a company there for many, many years, the COMAC, Commercial Aircraft Corporation of China, and they've been trying to make their own 737 A320 type of aircraft called the C919. I think I saw one at an air show many years ago.
But don't they simply copy?
They're very good at reverse engineering, put it like that. They tried it with a Russian turbofan aircraft until the Russians found out and said no, but they didn't have the metals to make the aircraft engine. So they're relying to some extent on engines from the USA of all countries, and sometimes then from Europe, the CFM companies like that. And they're also relying on American avionics, so there's a problem there straight away. Now, they can make their own like that. The problem is they can sell the aircraft internally to use in China, but getting a certificate of airworthiness outside the country itself has changed since the Boeing MAX accidents we spoke of.
Do they buy many Airbus? They do.
In fact, if you go to Hong Kong or Shanghai and places I've been, I love Chinese airports. At least the vast majority of the aircraft are split between, Boeings and or Airbuses in that regard. So they depend heavily on foreign aircraft, and they probably will do for a while. They'll make these aircraft, they'll get certification, they fly them internally, but they want to expand themselves across the Pacific and into Europe and Africa and places like that.
But I suppose for the moment, they simply need to replace the Boeings that are on order.
That's the trouble like that. And they're going to have a huge problem, I think, with maintenance if the focus is on the tariffs which they have to put on the stuff coming in from America, because that's where the spare parts. There are workarounds, of course. They might be able to order these parts from, other countries like Dubai or Europe from that point of view, unless the Americans put a certificate in saying the end user must be somebody friendly to the US.
Yeah, and of course, aircraft parts all have their own certificate, each little part.
They do. And the only country that gets around that is a country called, Russia, and that's making its own parts, and then it's redesignating other parts. But that certificate of airworthiness doesn't work outside the country. Nobody will take you if you don't have the proper parts and the proper records.
Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Safety and Security Auditor. Thank you very much. We'll have news next.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.